Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Sometimes ordinary people do amazing things. Community inspiration with Tony and Melissa in the morning. WICC 600.
You may have heard of our next guest, Zibby Owens, who happens to be an award-winning podcast creator. You may know her as the Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books podcast creator. And we're so glad to have you on the air. Zibby, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. So first of all, where did you come up with the idea to even do a podcast about reading and moms and the fact that we just don't tend to have time for it, but maybe we do?
Originally, I wanted to write a collection of parenting essays and sell it as a book because I had been doing a lot of writing and publishing essays online. And as I tried to sell that, I had coffee with a girlfriend of mine who's a young adult fiction author named Sarah Mlynowski. And essay collections aren't selling so well, blah, blah, blah. My agent had said, maybe I don't have enough of a platform to sell that book. And my friend said, you know, you should really have a podcast. And I was like, what's a podcast? So I went home and had to research what a podcast even was. At the same time, when my husband and I were talking about this essay collection, it was his idea originally to make it a book. And I replied to him. I just said, oh, moms don't have time to read books. And then I said, oh, maybe I'll use that as the title. That would be funny.
I love it.
And so then when I decided not to make it into a book, I said, oh, wait, this is perfect. I'll just use that title and make that the name of my podcast.
If people have not heard your podcast yet, what can people learn from each episode?
I interview 3, 4, sometimes 5 authors a week, and I ask them all the questions about their book that I'm wondering about. I ask them about the backstory, their process, what inspired them. I want to find out more about the author themselves, what their whole background is like, how their own experiences informed their novels or their books. And I just want to like get behind the book and find out more. So the episodes can really help readers and potential readers get a little taste of what the book could be if they don't have time necessarily to read the whole thing. It can help them get to know the author, which I think a lot of the times makes people more interested in reading the book. And it just helps all of us in our busy days sort of think and have a little intellectual stimulation and a little fun in literary space where they might not have had time to inject it into their daily lives otherwise.
What do your listeners think of it? What's some of the feedback you've gotten?
Oh, I've gotten amazing feedback, honestly, from people from West Africa to all places in the U.S. just thanking me for helping them rediscover books and finding a way to get out of their own lives for a little bit and falling into these stories. I think it helps people feel a lot less alone. It makes people feel more connected, gets people this inside view. And I think it's been helpful. I have 4 kids of my own, and I struggle to find time to read as much as I love it. And like you were saying, I mean, being able to read and get that injection of, I don't know, something else, it with so little infrastructure needed, as we were talking before, I mean, going to a yoga class or doing all these other self-care type things that people recommend often, it takes a lot. And sometimes I don't have the energy to do all of those things. I don't have energy to, bake. And I don't know. But opening up a book, that is so easy. You just literally open it up.
Yeah.
And then you're there. You're immediately in another world. And it's just, it's a nice escape from the hashtag mom life drama of the day to day.
When did you start this podcast?
In March of 2018.
Wow.
So that's almost 2 years ago.
So it's this successful already. Like I said, award winning. I mean, did you expect it to take off this quickly and this well?
Oh gosh, it doesn't feel quick. It feels like I've been doing this forever and I love it. It's a passion project for me. I love every minute, but for so long I was just doing the interviews wondering if my listenership would ever grow. And I was like, well, I'm just going to keep doing it because I love it. So I don't want to stop. And hopefully more people will listen and more people will find it. But yeah, that was definitely a challenge. So it's so nice. I feel like 2 years is a very long time because I do it every day, all day. And I'm reading all the time and interviewing 5 authors a week in my house and saving the episodes. And I don't know. So I'm very, very pleased and grateful, but it does not feel like an overnight thing.
Right. Wow. From the listener standpoint, it's very incredible how you've grown to fame very quickly and just such success. And we're so happy for you. Where can people find your podcast if they've never heard it?
You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, really anywhere you ever find podcasts. I also have it on my website, zibbyowens.com, Z-I-B-B-Y-O-W-E-N-S. And I link to each podcast episode from the headshot of the authors in my podcast page. So it's easy to find there as well.
All right. Thank you so much. Zibby Owens joining us, of course, and pretty local. You're right here in Manhattan, so not too far away. The name of the podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, and I absolutely love it. I'd recommend it myself. Zibby, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
WICC Bridgeport, WEPE HD2 Westport, WPLR HD2 New Haven. Locally owned by Connoisseur Media, Southern Connecticut's news and information leader. WICC 600.
Our top news story this morning, barely alive. Doctors are doing everything they can to get oxygen to Fotis Doulos' brain so they could maybe get some answers, but will they? I'm Melissa Shakachoff, and we are talking this morning to Bill Bloss, who is an attorney with Koskoff, Koskoff & Beter. I just want to let you know, Bill has absolutely nothing to do with this case. He is just our legal expert. We have been going to him throughout the Doulos case as it's unfolded since May, when Jennifer first was reported missing. And he's been great giving us advice and kind of giving us the play-by-play as to what will happen next. And this big breakthrough meant calling Bill. So, Bill, thank you for being in studio with us. How are you?
My pleasure.
All right. Pleasure to have you here, Bill, as always. I think my first question would be, what happened? I mean, the lawyers, Fotis himself, everybody involved with the case that was on their side, they seemed very confident and, hey, we're going to beat this. And everybody was cool and confident. And then now this happens. What's going on?
Well, there was actually a very tangible event that happened yesterday. There was a court hearing that was scheduled for noon to determine whether his bond should be revoked, and for a very tangible reason. The insurance company that underwrote the bond was given some information, apparently from Doulos, saying that he had property that he would put up for collateral. Because the insurance company is not going to write a $6 million bond on in somebody's signature. That's just not going to happen unless your name is Rockefeller or Bill Gates or something
sure,
like that.
Sure.
So he put up, Doulos put up at least three properties that we know of. Turns out two of them, according to press reports, are in foreclosure, and the third one was wildly overvalued. So this got to the attention of the prosecutor, and the prosecutor said, well, wait a minute. You know, this he doesn't really have any financial consequences. The insurance company said, wait a minute. We weren't told the truth. We want off this bond. We're not going to insure this risk because we're on the hook for this if he goes in the wind. So, and they don't have the protection that they thought they had. So basically what I think was probably going to happen yesterday at noon is that his bond was going to get revoked, pending a determination of whether he could repost a bond with adequate collateral. And obviously that didn't happen.
And he knew he didn't have that money. Like what you were saying to us in the commercial break was the fact that if he did go back to jail, this was going to be a situation of he only came out to see the living daylight for trials or for court appearances. But he was going to spend the rest of his time probably behind bars until he got convicted, if he got convicted.
Well, if the bond was revoked, it would be really hard to imagine that he was going to get another bond, because it would have meant that he was lying to the insurance company on the financial statement, and judges just aren't going to put up with that. He was already on a pretty short leash. I think Judge White, Gary White in Stanford, said you're on strike two. It's pretty hard to imagine this wouldn't have been strike three. So now, you know, if he went to trial, he might have been acquitted, and still may. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen down the road. It depends 100% on his health. But if he was acquitted, the odds were very high that he was going to spend some time in jail getting ready for trial. And it's not easy to get ready for a serious trial from a jail cell. I've represented lots of people in that situation. It's not ideal.
My question to you is, now what happens to the case? Let's just say theoretically, what if he doesn't make it? Or even if he does make it, I keep hearing that he may not be able to communicate. He may be a brain dead. Yeah. What happens now to the case for Fotis?
So there are really four possibilities, I think. One is he recovers adequately to understand the nature of the proceedings against him and assist with his defense after some period of time. And then so the case would go to trial after whenever that is. The other extreme to that is he either dies. If he dies, the case is dismissed. You can't continue the case for against a person who isn't alive. Or if he's incompetent, if it's quite possible that because of the hypoxia, because of the carbon monoxide poisoning, that he's actually is never going to be able to function again. We don't know.
Okay.
And there could be all sorts of places in between those two extremes on the spectrum.
And if he does pass, The charges will be dropped against him. What about the other two?
Right.
Well, that it would not be dropped against
okay.
the other two. It would be an interesting decision by the prosecutor about what to do, and an interesting decision by the defense attorneys. Andy Bowman represents Michelle Terconis. He's an excellent lawyer. They're going to have. I'm sure that they've already had calls. Both of the other defense attorneys have had calls from the prosecutor trying to get cooperation. The problem is that if Dulos is now either incompetent or never going to go to trial, their bargaining power has certainly been reduced, to put it mildly. But there still is a victim here. We have to remember that regardless of what happens with these three, there is still apparently, according to the state police, a dead woman, a wife, who was murdered. And so I'd be a little surprised if the prosecutor was willing to just say, well, you know, Dulos is not competent or not able to proceed, so we're just going to not proceed against you.
That just
doesn't seem like
well,
it.
Well, and with Fotis Doulos, if he is out of the picture, let's just say he is, because it does look like he is probably at best going to be brain dead, but maybe functioning if they can revive him. You know, what is the worst that could happen to Michelle Terconis and this other lawyer that is not obviously involved in the case, but, you know, is being charged for conspiracy? Conspiracy is not the same as obviously that they were at the hands of the murder, but what's the worst that they could face with conspiracy charges?
They can both face very lengthy prison sentences. Conspiracy, the United States is almost alone in making conspiracy a crime, an agreement. And conspiracy is just an agreement to commit a crime.
Mm.
It's a little bit like aiding and abetting, but not exactly. It's an agreement to commit a crime. It's still a serious crime. And they're both middle-aged, I guess I'd say, and they're both looking at very serious prison sentences if they are convicted. There's going to be some very interesting times for all of the lawyers, including the prosecutor, moving forward.
So even if it is 25 or 30 years, I mean, it could add up to a life sentence because of their age.
Right. Yeah. And I think Ms. Terconis is 42. She's looking at a significant exposure to a long prison sentence. Mawinney, the lawyer, yesterday had his law license suspended. But he hasn't even made bond. He's still sitting in a jail cell. So he's in a very difficult position. They both are.
Oh, and I think that one of the disheartening things here, too, which I think every news outlet has kind of touched on, is unless Fotis Doulos left some kind of a suicide note, there may be a point that we actually never do find Jennifer Doulos.
Well, it's quite possible. And I guess the one thing is if Terconis or Mawinney were involved, and if they have any information, that might be the information they could bargain with. Because now if Dulos doesn't recover, their bargaining power vis-a-vis Dulos is gone. If you were going to testify against Dulos, the time to have said, yes, I'll do that was 2 days ago.
Not today. Right.
If Dulos doesn't recover. If Dulos recovers, that's still on the table. And I'm sure the prosecutor would answer the phone if the defense attorneys called him and said, you know, we're interested in talking. He'd do more than answer the phone. But that may be what is on the table right now. Can they help bring some closure to the family? I don't know. Maybe they can. Maybe they can't.
Yeah. And even if they find a suicide note, what are the chances that he's going to confess? A lot of times those notes are sympathy. I'm sorry for the kids, and I'm sorry for this, and you know what I mean.
Right, right.
You know,
blaming others. Who knows?
Who knows?
You would like to think that if you've got to that extreme step, that you would be, stable enough or honest enough to say, look, I'm going to come clean, knowing that this is it. But that's not the way things work. If you're that stressed, if you're that unstable that you're going to do what his lawyer says that he did, attempted suicide, then it's not particularly trustworthy either way.
Sure. Bill, we've run out of time, but we thank you for taking a few moments. You didn't go out of your way, did you? This is on your way down to the offices?
on my way down to Bridgeport.
Oh, okay. All right. Very, very good. Thank you so much. What's it like in that area now after the shootings?
Well, that was a little edgy, you know.
There were a lot.
Now it's happened. You know, there've been incidents before, but this is pretty much the most brazen one in the past several years. And it's very troubling, really. Courthouse security is not something that I think we take seriously enough. Honestly, there have been shootings relating to civil cases, divorce cases, for example. Up in Middletown, there was an incident just outside the courthouse. But this is real. It's just intolerable, Tony. We just, I guess we're going to have to get police presence at some of these criminal courthouses.
Sure. And how many times have you been in that courthouse? How many times are you down to Holiday Inn for lunch or whatever? How many times? You know,
Almost every day.
Yeah, almost every day. Yeah, sure. Bill, I thank you so very much. I know you're a busy guy, and hopefully we can call on you again.
Anytime.
All right. Sounds good. That's Bill Bloss from Koskoff, Koskoff & Beter here on WACC 600. Lately, in the last few weeks, the coronavirus has been on everybody's mind, and we're all a little worried about it, and we thought we'd bring in a infectious disease person, chief of infectious diseases at Bridgeport Hospital. I'm talking about Dr. Zane Saul. Dr. Saul, thank you so much for joining us. How are you? I'm sorry, sir. I had you on hold. Let's try it again. Dr. Saul, okay. How are you this morning?
Good morning.
I think my first question would be, to start it all off, how do you know? What's the first symptom of the coronavirus?
Well, I mean, it can go from mild, so very minimally symptomatic, to a severe respiratory illness. So the real question is, you're not going to know. It can be very subtle, and it can be very serious all at the same time. So I think time will tell as we get better at identifying it. Once it's penetrated and made its way, to the States.
I was going to say, Dr. Saul, it kind of sounds like a combination of almost pneumonia and the flu. And a lot of times.
There are some people that, that didn't even know that they had something.
Right.
And then they test positive. And then there are people that have just a severe progressive respiratory illness. Like we hear about people that have the flu, healthy young people with the flu who end up getting pneumonia and become seriously ill, maybe even need to be hospitalized. So it runs the gamut in the symptomatology. But the important thing is going to be, placing that person at epidemiologic risk. Had they been to the Wuhan province in China? Have they been exposed to somebody? And I think, the biggest upsetting news that we learned last week is that you do not have to be symptomatic to be able to transmit the disease. So there could be even more transmission going on than we even imagined, because people that are exposed but don't have symptoms can still transmit the disease to other people.
Well, Melissa said this morning. It's airborne. I mean, somebody could sneeze and it's out there?
Right. Oh. Yep.
I mean,
could be in the supermarket and waiting in line, and somebody could exactly sneeze or cough next to you, and that's all you need to get exposed.
Oh, that's scary. Yeah, that's really scary.
It is. And I think the other thing that's scary too, Dr. Saul, that you kind of touched on, is that, again, if you're talking about symptoms like for pneumonia or for the flu, let's just say, a lot of times people will actually self-diagnose themselves at home. They know the signs. They can feel it coming. And they either go to the store, they get Teraflu or whatever they need over the counter, and they knock out the symptoms or whatever the case may be. I think that's one of the scariest things, is that you may think that you could have control and, hey, I self-diagnosed it. I know I've got this problem. But you may not know that is actually the coronavirus you're dealing with. And we don't have a vaccine for that just yet, right?
No. Matter of fact, I read this morning that it will take about 15 months to develop a vaccine and get it on the market.
Excellent.
So, that's more than a year away.
Wow. So what do we do?
What do we do?
I mean, I think history will tell us that we can get through this. We had SARS. We had MERS. We had all these viruses that came internationally and, threatened to come to the U.S., which many of them did. But over time, we develop immunity, and, this too will pass, and we will, develop some strategies on how to combat this. So, SARS came and went. We had a big scare. We were really worried that it was going to come, to this country in a very big way. And we were able to weather the storm. So I think history, will likely repeat itself. So we need to have, some cautious observation and patience. And let's let the international experts do what they do best, and which is screening people in the airports that are coming in the country and making sure that we're identifying. I read that a whole group of people that just spent some time in Wuhan, China, voluntarily are quarantining themselves in the New York area, and they're screening them for symptoms. So I think if we do those kind of things and we do a lot of prevention, hopefully we'll have the same result that we had with SARS. that it will eventually die down. But
Dr. Saul, in the meantime, like you said, it's going to take 15 months to come up with some kind of vaccination, at least 15 months. What about these people that are already infected? Do they stay quarantined for 15 months or 2 years?
2 weeks. Two weeks. Yes, it's a two-week quarantine period. That's how long it takes. If you don't get symptoms by that time, they believe that you're going to be okay. So it's a two-week period. And, yeah, like I said, I mean, once people start to develop some immunity, we'll see some benefits coming from that.
And I do know that, Dr. Saul, obviously, they're, you know, and maybe this is out of your jurisdiction to talk about, but I know traveling kind of, there's, you know, we know that the CDC has told people, you know, don't travel to the province in China, where obviously this is all kind of coming from Wuhan. But, you know, there are also questions, I'm just thinking, from my own family, let's just say. So my sister, who is supposed to go to Japan in a few months for a dance competition, I mean, is it probably a good idea, until especially a vaccine does come out, that people maybe steer clear of leaving the country? Or what would kind of be your suggestion? You know,
Yes. I mean, it really was kind of, the timing was really bad because of the Lunar New Year. It was they estimated, you know, that millions travel from China all around the world. And so there's a lot of potential for spread. I think you have to weigh the risks and the benefits and maybe take some precautions. I think we're going to see a lot more people traveling with masks, you know, people in airplanes wearing masks. And I think, you know, being cautious is the really the best way to protect yourself.
All right, Dr. Saul, we've run out of time. One final question. Could you clear this up for us? You can't get the coronavirus from drinking Corona beer, right?
Yes. No, you cannot get it. And even if you use a lime, you won't get it that way either.
It's just, you'd be surprised how many people.
I know. You should see the memes going all over the internet. It's some of them are pretty funny, but it's not a funny thing. It's a serious thing. So thanks for educating the public about this.
Also, though, really quick, Tony, you got to give Dr. Saul your slogan.
Well, I just thought, you know, my slogan for you would be, if you're not feeling well, you better call Saul.
Thank you. I love that.
What do you like?
Right?
I like it.
I told you.
I like it a lot. That should be right on your card, you know?
I like it, too.
Dr. Saul, it certainly was a pleasure talking to you. And thank you so much for clearing up some
myths.
Thank you. All right.
All right.
There
Have
you
a good
go.
Day, everybody.
Nice guy.